dodged them for years. We've dodged them with Belcore as our puppet. He's done after this. We both know that. Isfald didn't deny it. Belcore had perhaps convinced himself that he could survive the day's events, but Isfald knew better. No story Belcore could craft would keep him away from Imperial security investigators. We can rebuild the movement, she said. The same way we built it in the first place. He smiled, but it looked forced. I don't have it in me, Isval. The hole in her stomach grew larger. There is no movement without you, she whispered. He shook his head. It's bigger than me. And if we start a galaxy-wide rebellion, Ryloth will have a chance at freedom. No, the movement's an idea, not a person. She knew it wasn't. She knew Ryloth needed him. She knew she needed him. You're wrong, she said. I'm right. And the fight will go on, Isval, but after this, it'll have to fall to someone else to lead. He grimaced. I'll do what I can even after today, but we don't have enough tools left to do much more than what we've done. We'll start the fire by killing Vader and the Emperor. It's just that someone else is going to have to fan the flames and burn the Empire down.
Closing in, Phelan said over the comlink.
Vader, the Emperor, and the two surviving royal guards put kilometers behind them as night ate the last of the day. The darkness deepened as they picked their way through the uneven ground, the tangle of roots, the columns of tree trunks. The darkness seemed to amplify sound, isolate it, echo it back until Vader's breathing filled the forest. The moons hadn't risen, and it would be hours before they did. The forest canopy hid the meager light of the stars, leaving them in a sea of ink. Vader's armor allowed him to see in infrared and several other spectrums, and the Royal Guard's armor too could compensate for low light. But the Emperor... Vader spared a glance to his left, at his master, who walked confidently through the darkness. The Emperor saw clearly, saw everything as ever. Creatures large and small moved through the foliage at the edge of Vader's vision, slinking, crawling, loping. Animals prowled the forest's canopy high above, predators hunting prey. From time to time, the abortive squeal of something dying punctuated the quiet.
It's instructive, isn't it, this place?
His master asked.
It is unforgiving of weakness.
It is,
his master said.
The weak are found out and killed by the strong.
As it must be.
As it must be indeed.
But sometimes the strong mistake their strength.
Vader dared to add.
And so demonstrate weakness.
Do they?
His master commented, and Vader said nothing more. Long into the hours of night, Vader walked beside his master, silent but for the respirator. He would stop or not, as his master commanded. Before long, the breathing of the guardsmen sounded not unlike Vader's. They were taxed, but still his master pressed on. Eventually, his master stopped and held up a hand.
You can rest here for a time, Captain.
But not long.
We will press on again soon.
Thank you, my Emperor,
said the Captain, and he and Dee set about making a hurried camp. In moments, they had a small campfire going. Vader stood near it, staring down into the flames. His master sat cross-legged in a pose of meditation. Tension hung between Vader and his master. Tension whose provenance Vader could not quite place.
Master.
Do you think treachery begins in the deed, my friend?
No. It begins in the thoughts.
His master showed teeth. Perhaps a smile, perhaps a snarl.
And yet, we can't know the thoughts of another, especially those of a traitor, who guards his thoughts closely so as not to reveal his treachery. And so we must draw out the thoughts to have them manifest in deeds, and thus reveal the truth. Do you agree?
Vader stared into the flames.
I hear nothing with which to disagree.
Again, the smile or snarl from his master.
You were a traitor, were you not, Lord Vader?
Vader's breathing caught on the hook of sudden anger.
What did you say?
To the Jedi. To Padme, to Obi-Wan, to all those you loved.
His master turned to look at him, his eyes reflecting the flames. Vader didn't know the answer his master wanted to hear, so he simply answered with the truth.
Yes.
His master turned his eyes back to the fire. The captain of the Royal Guard sat on the ground across from them.
You should remove your helmet, Captain,
the Emperor said.
It must wear on you to have it on all the time.
Thank you, my Emperor,
the Captain said. He removed his helmet to reveal a mien familiar to Vader, the scarred face of a clone, the features an echo of so many faces from Vader's past. Rex, Cody, Sixes, Echo. The roster of names moved through Vader's mind, each of them a trigger for a memory, each of them a ghost from his past. Is there an Imperial installation nearby, my lords? The captain asked. Sergeant Deez removed his helmet too, showing a face that wasn't that of a clone. A clean-shaven, axe-jawed human with short-cropped blonde hair and tattoos of abstract patterns inked on his cheeks. If Deez had been a clone, Vader imagined they'd have called him Ink.
What are we looking for, my lords?
Deez asked. Vader's master stared into the glow of the fire.
Oh, I think we'll know when we find it, Sergeant.
Of course, my lord, said the captain. He broke out pre-made meals for himself and his comrade. Neither the Emperor nor Vader ate. Instead, both meditated, communing with the Force, Vader standing, his master seated. Vader, still pondering his master's words, drifted into the Force, let its rough currents pull him where it willed. As was so often the case, he saw moments from his past, a series of inchoate, violent, pain-filled images and sounds. His decapitation of Darth Tyrannus, the first kill his master had asked of him. Padme screams. His murder of the younglings in the Jedi Temple, their eyes wide with a fear that only fed his righteous wrath. Padme screams, her pain. Treachery. Mace Windu's shouts of rage as he'd realized the truth. Padme screams. Traitor. The fires of Mustafar, his hatred for Obi-Wan, who'd feared him and tried to keep him from his destiny, who'd tried to take Padme from him, who'd put him in the armor. Padme screams, her despair. No, Anakin, no! Vader opened his eyes, his fists clenched, his anger overflowing, to see his master standing across the fire from him, staring at him. His master's expression was unreadable, his features partially hidden within the depths of his hood. Vader sensed the anger in his master, sensed, too, the threat that lived in that anger. Vader did not fear it. Not at that moment.
Where are the guards?
The royal guards were nowhere to be seen.
How long was I?
I sent them away. They will return soon.
A long silence, then.
What did you see as you meditated?
I saw deaths and faces from my past. the events that led me to this moment. I see them frequently when I consider the destiny the Force has for me.
His master's anger grew, though his expression did not change. His voice was the low murmur of a predator.
Your destiny, yes. I have seen hints of it as well.
For a moment, caught up in the after effects of his vision, Vader wondered what it would be like to face his master in battle. To take his small, frail body in his hands, lift it from the ground, and... He cut off the thoughts, but his master had sensed them, for his face split in a dark smile.
I see you, apprentice.
And I see you, master. You think I long for the past when I see it in visions, but you're wrong. I don't long for it. I think of it and the man I was then, and regard it all with contempt. And the only thing that makes it tolerable to ponder is that it ends with me here, in this armor, with you. I feel no longing. I feel no regret. My memories feed my anger. And my anger feeds my strength. And so am I able to serve you and the Force better. Your doubt.
Continue.
Vader did, heedless of what might come next.
Your doubt is unwarranted. And angers me.
Several moments passed, each Sith Lord staring across the flames at the other. Finally, Vader stepped around the fire and fell to one knee before his master. He felt his master's eyes on him, the eyes that saw deeply into everything. He imagined his master considering options.
The guards are returning,
his master said.
And they are not alone. Rise, Lord Vader.
Chapter 14.
Belkor sat in the co-pilot seat of the small, maneuverable search and rescue craft. They were scouring Ryloth's surface near the equator, the search location based on the data Cham had provided about Morse's descent trajectory. Hard to run a search in the dark with calm down to line of sight, Ophim, the pilot flying with him, complained.
It is, Belkor said.
Belkor had assembled a team of men who owed him favors, men who wore the uniform but had no particular loyalty to the Empire, men who'd do what he asked without too many questions. He'd given them a cover story, of course. The rebels who'd brought down the Perilous had done so in the guise of Imperial troops with the apparent aid of Moff Deelian Mors. Belkor had a general location for the Moff ship, which loyal Imperial troops had almost brought down. Belkor told the men that they were among a select group to whom he'd confided, because he didn't know how deep the conspiracy might run. If anyone suspected him of concocting a story, none of them had spoken up. They owed Belkor their positions and the perks of power. They owed Mors nothing.
Run through the search grid again,
he transmitted to the four V-wings flying beside his search and rescue craft.
Fly a comm ladder. I need to know what you see.
They acknowledged his order and veered off to search again. They'd staggered their formation so that one was always in contact with another, and that one with yet another, and so on, all the way back to Belkor's ship. Maintaining the formation required constant attention and limited their ability to search.
Anything from the three V-wings to the south?
He asked Ophim.
Nothing, sir.
Belkor looked out the glass bubble cockpit of the craft. Much of the bubble was lit with the heads-up display of the craft's elaborate sensor array. The bubble itself provided light amplification, so he could look out and down on the terrain as if it were dusk. Ryloth's forest stretched out below, banded to the south by a desert dotted with tors. He clenched his jaw in frustration. "I take that back, sir," Otham said, holding a finger up to the headset he wore. "One of the V-Wings is reporting smoke."
"Where?"
Otham put a finger on the screen to show the location. "Close to the Equatorial Communications Hub. The smoke was probably the result of the attack on the hub that Belcour had enabled."
Still, he had nothing else.
Morse could have gone down near the hub. The smoke could be from her ship.
"Go," he said to Otham. "Send the V-Wings the coordinates. They're to continue their check of the grid.
Then we rendezvous at the communications hub." Otham nodded, accelerating, and the nimble SNR craft darted through the cutting winds.
"Anything from the V-Wing on station near the smoke?" Belcour asked.
Otham shook his head. "Dead air, sir. They broke up the comm ladder when you ordered the rendezvous at the hub."
Belcour cursed.
He wouldn't know anything more until he was close enough to see for himself.
Within a few minutes, he'd convinced himself that it was Morse's shuttle, that it had gone down near the hub, and that the moth had died on impact.
But his fantasy broke on the rocks of reality as the lights of the hub came into view in the distance.
"Incoming from the V-Wing on station," said Otham. "Smoke is from the Equatorial Communications Hub."
But?
"The hub suffered an attack, which explains the success of the jamming signal, and I think you should contact the commander of the station."
"What? Why?"
"Sir, the V-Wing pilot reports that Moff Morse was here."
Belcour wasn't sure he'd heard correctly.
"What did you say?"
Otham looked skeptical.
"According to one of our men, the Moth was here."
"When? How? Is she still here?"
"I don't know, though I gather she is not here now."
Belcour's mind started working through possibilities. The Moth had survived the downing of her shuttle and had ended up at the communications hub.
Before or after the attack?
"What's that, sir?"
Belcour felt the sweat forming under his shirt anew.
"Nothing, Otham, speaking to myself. Get Major Borkus on the line."
Through the bubble of the recon craft, he stared down at the distant smoking ruins of the communications hub. Sham's team had done a thorough job on the dishes, which lay in jagged, bent piles. Dozens of droids and men and ships, working in the glow of portable lights, buzzed around one of the fallen dishes, working to get it repaired. Belcour wasn't thinking clearly, he realized. He had not been prepared for Morse to have made it away from her ship, much less into the hands of an officer like Steen Borkus. Morse could already have deduced Belcour's involvement in the day's events. She hadn't attempted to contact Belcour after the crash, after all. She could have shared her suspicions with Borkus. Could be on her way back to the communications center at that moment. Belcour could return to find a security team waiting for him. All at once he felt weak. Like he was nothing but liquid. Like he would drain away.
Otham nodded when communications were established. Belcour cleared his throat and gathered himself.
"This is Colonel Belcour Dre. Am I speaking to Major Borkus?"
"Colonel Dre?"
The voice did not sound like Borkus's.
"Major Borkus isn't here. I am Captain Narin. The Major left with Moff Morse over an hour ago."
Belcour looked over at Otham and cut off the comm for a moment. Did anyone tell them anything about the Moth's betrayal?
"No, sir," Otham said. "Need to know," you said.
"Good."
Belcour reactivated the comm.
"Left for where, Narin?"
"She, Borkus, and a squad of stormtroopers took two ships on a rescue mission. VIPs who escaped the Perilous, as I understand things. You're here to assist?" "Those must be some VIPs, sir, to bring the whole High Command down the equator."
"You've no idea," Belcour thought but didn't say.
He tried to process what he'd heard. The Moth was still attempting to find Vader and the Emperor, which meant she knew, or at least believed, that they'd survived the explosion of the Perilous and its immediate aftermath. That made sense. The Moth could perhaps save her office, or at least her life, if she was the hero leading the team that found Vader and the Emperor. But she hadn't tried to contact Belcour. Did the Moth arrive before or after the attack on the station?
Afterwards, sir.
That might explain it. Did she dispatch anyone to send word to the communications center that she was alive? Or that she was searching for the VIPs?
Let me check, sir,
said Narin. After a lengthy silence, the captain returned.
No, sir, she did not. But she and the Major were in a hurry.
No doubt, Belcour said, feeling certain that the Moth had deduced his treachery.
Sir, I don't have the coordinates the Moth and the Major are searching, and with Calm being line of sight, we've no way to raise them and alert them that you're en route.
That's quite all right, Captain. I know the search coordinates.
Sir, if you don't mind my asking, what in the hell is going on out there?
I don't have time to brief you fully, Narin. Terrorists have struck the Empire. That's all you need to know for now. How long before normal communication is possible?
We're focusing our efforts on Dish 3. 9 hours, sir. Maybe a bit less.
9 hours. Belcour had 9 hours to find the Moth and arrange for her demise.
What else can we do for you, sir? If we can help with these terrorists...
Nothing. Belcour replied. You've been most helpful already. We'll be on our way immediately.
Good luck, sir.
The moment they cut the comm, Belcour said to Ophim, so we know that Borkus is in league with the Moth.
They aren't rescuing any VIPs from the Perilous, Ophim said.
Agreed, Belcour said, running with it. Probably meeting other collaborators or rendezvousing with the terrorists.
We'll get them, sir, Ophim said.
Yes, we will, said Belcour. The Moth had 2 ships and some stormtroopers. Belcour had the search and rescue recon craft and 6 V-wings. If he could catch the Moth in the air, it would be over in moments. Here are the coordinates, he said, feeding Ophim the site where Cham thought Vader and the Emperor had gone down. Alert the V-Wings and let's get on our way.
Yes, sir.
Vader sensed it. A hostile, hungry wave coursing toward them through the thick forest. The Royal Guards broke through the tree line at a full run, blaster rifles hanging from their hands. The sergeant had lost his helmet, and his eyes were wide and white in the mask of his tattoos. The ground vibrated slightly, and the foliage behind them shook as whatever was in pursuit charged hard after them. The captain stumbled as he ran, but managed to keep his feet. He waved for Vader and the Emperor to retreat.
Run, my lords!
The captain shouted, his voice muffled by his helmet.
We need a more defensible position!
Defensible from what?
Vader asked, igniting his lightsaber.
Lilacs, my lord! More than...
Vader heard them then. The insectoid clicking and hissing of Ryloth's apex predator carried on the wind. From the sound, he judged there to be 12 or so of the huge creatures, all tearing through the forest and closing fast.
Lilacs, the Emperor said. Interesting.
My lords!
The captain said as he reached them, gasping.
They'll be on us in moments. We should move.
Deez aimed his blaster rifle back at the trees.
Seconds only, Captain,
he said tensely. Vader activated his saber and took position beside the Emperor. Seeing this, the sergeant and the captain stood near the Emperor too, rifles ready. They didn't have long to wait. The Lilacs burst through the trees, huge insectoid creatures that bounded over logs, the pair of tentacles near their mandibles squirming. Seeing Vader, the Emperor, and the guards, they hissed and rushed forward. The guards fired, their rifles riding red streaks in the air. The bolt struck the lilacs, but bounced off their carapaces, deflecting into the trees. Vader raised his hand, seized one of the leading lilacs with the force, and flung it sideways into the trees. It struck a tree trunk as thick around as a man, and its ridged, spiked carapace cracked open, leaving it squirming helplessly at the base of the tree. Beside Vader, his master gestured with both hands, and jagged lines of forced lightning shot forth, striking two of the foremost lilacs, lifting the creatures from the ground and driving them backward, tumbling, hissing, screaming in agony, dying. When his master ended the lightning, he drew his lightsaber, and he and Vader moved forward as one, each protecting the other as they twisted and spun out of the way of the lilac's tentacles and snapping mandibles, slashing and severing legs, tentacles, heads. In moments, the forest was still, and Vader and his master stood back to back in the midst of the carnage. Both deactivated their weapons. The sergeant and the captain simply stared at them, their blaster rifles hanging uselessly from their gloved hands. The Emperor cocked his head, as though hearing something from far away.
There are more.
Alerted, Vader attuned himself to the Force. He felt them coming.
More lilacs.
Many more.
This terrain is poor for a stand against so many, Master.
Vader said, feeling the lilac horde draw closer. A rushing sound came from the forest like an incoming tide.
There are hundreds,
he added, hearing the snapping of limbs, the hisses of the lilacs, the insectoid chittering.
At least.
Agreed,
the Emperor said absently, his voice as calm as still water.
Let's find a more suitable spot to face these creatures, Captain.
The captain sagged with relief.
Yes, my lord. Follow me.
To Deez, he said,
take the rear, Sergeant.
With that, the captain turned and bolted through the forest, leaping logs and skirting tree trunks. Vader deactivated his lightsaber, and he and his master kept pace. Vader noticed that the forest had quieted around them. There was only his breathing and the distant clicking and chittering of the pursuing horde, the snapping of wood, the low rumble of the lilac's collective tread. They were gaining.
I don't see any of them yet,
Dee said.
They're still coming.
Vader presumed the lilacs could smell them somehow, or had a keen sense of hearing, or used some other sense to hunt. The four men broke into a clearing covered in low grass and brush and dashed across it. The exhausted breathing of the royal guards now sounded as loud to Vader as his respirator. He still felt the lilacs behind them, their numbers growing as their bloodlust drew more of their kind. He imagined a horde could clear the fauna from a few square miles of forest.
Hurry, my lords!
The captain said. They'd almost crossed the clearing by the time the lilacs broke through the tree line behind them.
There they are!
Dee said. Vader spared a glance back to see that 20 lilacs at least had burst out of the trees, a clicking wall of spiked exoskeletons, tentacles, and mammoth jaws. More followed, more, the horde boiling out of the trees. They clambered over one another in their hunger, a tangle of limbs and claws and clicks. The creatures saw them right away, of course, and uttered a collective hiss and eager clicking. Their thick limbs and great weight threw up chunks of soil and dirt as they lumbered across the clearing. The four men reached the tree line on the opposite side of the clearing and plunged once more into the tangle of trunks and roots.
Look for a cliff or a tunnel. A place where we can channel their attack.
They're closing!
Deez cried, looking back. He fired behind him with his blaster rifle.
Shots! Bounce off the carapaces!
The Emperor gestured with a free hand, using the force to topple trees. they fell into the horde, crushing lilacs, knocking down other trees that crushed still more. The survivors clambered over the dead without pausing, continuing their frenetic pursuit. The captain drew one of the grenades he carried, activated it, and tossed it behind them at the horde. It exploded a couple of seconds later, the boom reverberating through the forest, toppling another tree, and causing shrieks of pain among the lilacs.
"Go right, Captain,"
the Emperor said.
100 meters from here, there is a tunnel."
The captain did not question, though Vader wondered how his master knew. The captain angled right as the lilacs closed from behind, their huge bodies snapping trees as they came. The distance between the four men and the horde shrank, and both guards fired their rifles one-handed as they ran, the shots blowing up parts of tree trunks and striking lilacs but not slowing the overall advance of the horde. They reached a steep ravine, and the guards started down the side, stumbling and grabbing at roots to stay upright as they descended. Vader and the Emperor leapt down from the top. A creek bisected the ravine. The opposite side was a steep wall of rocks and tree roots and soil that extended as far as they could see to the left and right. The lilacs were still coming.
"Where, my Emperor?"
the captain asked.
"I don't see a tunnel anywhere!"
The lead lilacs from the horde poured over the side of the ravine, long limbs digging into the soil, tentacles grabbing at branches and roots as they scrambled down. Vader activated his lightsaber and stood beside the Emperor, eyeing the side of the ravine for the tunnel. Meanwhile, the captain and Deez shot at everything that moved, their blaster fire lighting up the darkness. Lilacs hissed and chittered.
"Hands!"
Deez exclaimed as he fired.
"A headshot puts them down!"
More lilacs came over the side, more, until they looked like a seething avalanche tumbling down the hill.
"There!"
Vader said, finally spotting the opening, a dark oval low on the face of the valley wall, perhaps 2 meters tall, and partially blocked by exposed tree roots as thick as an arm.
"Go, Sergeant!"
the captain said to Deez as they all backpedaled quickly toward the tunnel entrance.
"Then the Emperor, then Lord Vader. I bring up the rear. Go!"
The lilacs rolled toward them, clambering over one another as they came, the petty palps at either side of their large mouths waving spasmodically as if already shoveling flesh into their jaws. Half a dozen lilac carcasses hung in the roots along the side of the ravine, but the rest kept coming. The captain's blaster rifle dropped one with a shot to the head, then another, but the creatures just kept pounding forward. 10 or more had reached the ravine's bottom and clambered wildly toward the men, tentacles squirming, jaws working. Vader raised a hand, fell into the force, and loosed a blast of power that slammed into the lilacs on the ravine's floor, driving them backward, partially back up the ravine's side, and into those that came behind, turning the creature's advance into a chaotic scramble of limbs and agitated clicking. They tore at one another in their frustrated frenzy. Deez ducked into the darkness of the tunnel, followed by the Emperor, followed by Vader, who deactivated his lightsaber, and finally by the captain, who backed in, still firing as he retreated. The tunnel, as black as pitch, went back only a meter before opening into a large cavern that had openings to the left and right and center.
"The hillside must be honeycombed with these,"
Dee said.
"Keep going!"
the captain said over his shoulder, still firing out through the mouth of the tunnel.
"Move! Move!"
"No,"
Vader said, reigniting his lightsaber.
"This is where we stand."
There was movement in the growth at the tunnel's mouth, and then a lilac lurched through, snapping roots, all teeth and hisses, only half a meter from the captain. Vader pushed the captain aside, bounded forward, and drove the blade of his lightsaber into the creature's mouth and out the top of its head. The huge carcass collapsed. Behind it, dozens more lilacs scrambled to get in around their fallen fellow. Vader bowed his head, raised his hand, and loosed a blast of power, eliciting squeals of pain and sending the Lileks flying backward.
"Back away,"
the Emperor commanded, and Vader and the captain fell back. The Emperor gestured casually, and the tunnel ceiling came down in a shower of rock and dirt. The sound of frustrated hisses and roars carried through the rubble. The four men stood in the light of Vader's lightsaber. He deactivated it, casting them in darkness. The captain turned on his helmet lights.
"Listen," Dee said, cocking his head. "I think something is down there."
He nodded at the left-hand tunnel. Vader reached out with the Force, felt the Lileks coming at them down the side tunnel.
"You're correct, Sergeant."
"We shouldn't make our stand here, my lords,"
said the captain.
"They'll be coming at us from both directions."
The Lileks were getting closer, their clicks and hisses growing louder. Dee's pulled one of the grenades he carried. Vader grabbed him by the wrist to stop him.
"You could collapse the tunnels."
Dee's looked embarrassed.
"Right. Of course, Lord Vader. Please, my Emperor,"
said the captain, gesturing down the central tunnel.
"He's right, Master. We should continue."
"Agreed,"
the Emperor said, and they turned and hurried into the winding central tunnel, which sloped downward, widening as they went. They'd covered maybe 200 meters, moving ever deeper underground, when they heard the first sounds of the Lilek's pursuit coming from behind them. Rock formations dotted the floor and thick clumps of crystal hung from the ceiling of the tunnel, but there was nothing that would have made for a defensible pocket. The chitters and hisses bounced off the stone, seeming to race ahead of them.
"They're faster than us in this terrain," Dee said. "We're going to have to turn and fight."
As the Lileks closed on them, the tunnel seemed to hum under the force of their tread. Soon Vader could hear the clatter of their exoskeletons as they ran over the stone.
"They are almost upon us."
The captain fell back, taking station with Dee's at the rear, between the Emperor and the Horde. Vader ignited his lightsaber to provide at least some additional light.
"Here they come!"
the captain said, and started firing wild, one-handed shots over his shoulder.
"I see them!"
said Dee's and started firing, too. Lilek squealed and hissed.
"You may use your grenades."
The cavern was wide enough to endure the blast without collapsing. Both guards immediately activated and tossed grenades. 5 seconds later, the tunnel behind them reverberated with the sound of the explosions, Lilek screams, and the rumble of falling stone. The blast wave roared from the confines of the tunnel. Vader and the Emperor used the Force to deflect the bulk of the wave from them, but the power of it drove the two royal guards face first into the floor, their armor scraping along the stone. Vader turned and used the Force to lift both guards to their feet. Dee's was bleeding from the nose and looked stunned.
"We won't slow for you again. The Horde is still coming."
As if to make his point, the sounds of the pursuing Lileks rose up from behind, clicking hisses and squeals. Vader took position behind his master as the four of them continued down the tunnel. He sought a place where they could stop and hold their ground, but the tunnel went on and on, not narrowing, with its downward slope diving ever deeper into the planet. Drawing on the Force as he ran, he gestured at the ceiling and took hold of several large chunks of crystal stalactites. He rocked them loose with his power, then let them dangle there, waiting for the vibration of the passing Horde to cause them to fall. The tunnel wound left and right as they descended, but Vader saw no side tunnels, just the single tube continuing to burrow into Ryloth's crust. From behind came the boom of falling rock, the crystals Vader had loosened, and the squeals of crushed Lileks. Yet still they came, the Horde seemingly unbreakable, and they were still closing. At the end of a long, sloped straightaway, Vader let the rest of the group run on while he stopped to look back. His helmet reflected the meager light projected by his lightsaber, and he saw the Horde enter the far end of the tunnel, an ocean of legs, tentacles, and mandibles, saw them scrabble over and around the stalagmites that dotted the floor. The beat of their armored, pointed legs put small pits in the stone. Some of them clambered along the walls like giant arachnids, coating the surface of the tunnel behind them. Their tentacles waved as they scurried, jaws working as if already masticating flesh. Vader could not escape the feeling that he was being steered, perhaps by the Lilex, or perhaps by his master. He fell deeply into the Force and loosed a wave of power from his outstretched hand that filled the circumference of the tunnel. The blast slammed into the charging Horde, cracking exoskeletons, shattering stalagmites, and driving a score or more of the Lilex in the lead backward in a shower of broken bodies and broken stone. They squealed and chittered and flailed, and the Lilex following after scrambled over the fallen and wounded, their eyes fixed on Vader. Vader was prepared to meet them all, slaughter every one of them then and there, but his master's voice from up the tunnel pulled him around.
Come, Lord Vader.
He deactivated his lightsaber, turned, and hurried forward, using the Force to augment his speed and catch up with the other three.
What happened?
Deez asked, but Vader ignored him. When he reached his master's side, he voiced his thoughts.
Yes,
the Emperor agreed.
The beasts are hurting us, unintentionally, I think.
Hurting us to where?
We'll soon know.
The Emperor said,
I think we should prepare ourselves.
They hustled through the tunnel, which had finally started to narrow.
There's light ahead,
the captain said.
Look!
Vader saw it, a dim green glow coming through a circular opening about a meter and a half in diameter. Soon the tunnel gave way to a large cavern 30 meters across, a hemispherical cyst in the planet. They stood in the opening, 5 meters up on the wall of the cyst. Clusters of glowing crystal sprouted from the walls and floor, the source of the ambient light. Hundreds of Lileks milled about on the floor of the cyst, all of them tending what Vader assumed to be the queen of the colony, a Lilek with a bloated abdomen 3 times the size of the rest. Large, gray, leathery-looking sacs adhered to the walls and clumps of 10 or 20 here and there. Egg sacs. A dozen or more tunnel openings dotted the walls and ceiling, all of them about the same size as that in which the 4 men stood. For a moment, no one spoke, and the only sound in the tunnel was the labored breathing of the guards and Vader's respirator. The Queen Lilek noticed them then. She swung her huge head in their direction, fixed her eyes on them, and hissed an alarm, the sound bouncing off the walls of the cavern echoing. The rest of the Lileks in the cavern turned toward them too, their movement causing a collective clicking. They hissed as one, their tentacles squirming in agitation. Down the tunnel behind the men, the pursuing Lileks continued to close.
And now we know to where we were being herded,
the Emperor said. Vader turned to Deez and the captain.
You two are to hold as long as you can here.
The captain stiffened.
We will stay with our Emperor.
Do as Lord Vader commands,
the Emperor said.
What are you going to do then?
Deez asked, while he and the captain took grenades in hand, activated them, and waited for the pursuing Lileks to appear.
We're going to kill them all,
Vader said, igniting his lightsaber. The Emperor cackled, drew his own lightsaber, and activated the red blade. Chapter 15. Phelan called back from the cockpit.
Callan's almost in range. And got him.
Callan's voice sounded over Cham's and Isval's comm.
Cham, I found the Emperor shuttle.
Where are you? Cham asked, instinctively looking out the viewport of the escort boat, though he could see nothing but night. A pause then.
I'm on the ground near it. Listen, I know
Cham cursed. I told you, surveillance only, Callan.
Scan showed no life, so...
No life? Bodies? After too long a pause, Cham added, I can't see you, Callan, so if you're nodding or shaking your head...
Right, right. Yes, there are three bodies, and one of them is a royal guard, which means they were here, Cham. The remains of a camp are here, too.
A camp? Callan, they could come back. I want you to get on your ship and...
The remains of a camp, I said. And if they were anywhere near here, they'd have heard my ship and come back already. They're gone, Cham, and I think you need to get Gaul down here.
Cham felt his skin warm and his leku perk up. You think they're on foot in the forest?
Gaul will have to confirm, but I think so. If a ship had picked them up, they'd have taken the guard's body, wouldn't they? And I don't see a sign of anything big landing nearby anyway. I'm not the tracker, of course, but...
But you think they're on foot? Remember that I can't see you nodding.
Yes, I think they're on foot.
Cham barely managed to hold in a grin. Isval did not. She grinned fiercely and nodded. We're coming down, Callan, Cham said. Stay put. I mean it. Isval reached out and squeezed his shoulder.
They're on foot, Cham. We'll catch them. We will.
The narrow confines of the boat did not allow her room for her habitual pacing, so she just shifted from foot to foot.
They can't have gone far. They don't know the terrain. They could be wounded from the crash. Slow.
Or not, Cham said, trying to curb her eagerness, though he felt it himself.
Set us down near Callan, Phelan.
Isval stopped fidgeting and looked Cham in the eyes, an expression of concern on her face. She put a hand on his shoulder.
Are you all right? Really all right?
He nodded to reassure her. I'm fine. Let's do what we came to do. She looked skeptical, but nodded in return and left him to take a seat next to Gaul. Cham watched her go, regretting his earlier words to her. He'd changed her with them. Unlike him, she had never had much of a life outside of the movement. He hadn't appreciated how much she needed it, how much she needed him. He'd vented his own concerns, and in doing so, had undermined her foundation. He should have kept his damn mouth shut. Isval sat beside Gaul, tiny beside his bulk. He smelled of sweat and oiled metal.
How much of that did you hear?
She asked softly.
I heard they're on foot.
That's not what I mean.
I make it a point not to listen,
he said, staring straight ahead. She put a hand on his forearm. His flesh was lined with veins.
How much?
He shrugged the mountains of his shoulders.
Enough.
She nodded, sat quietly for a moment, then said,
He's wrong. The movement isn't just an idea. It's also him.
I know, Gaul said.
She put out a fist.
Nothing happens to him then, agreed? We're going to need to rebuild after today, and for that, we'll need him.
He sniffed, then tapped her tiny fist with the calloused boulder of his own.
Agreed. And how about nothing happens to any of us?
You think you can track them?
She asked.
Vader, I mean.
I can, he said.
Even in the dark?
He turned and looked at her with an expression that told her to stop asking stupid questions.
Good. Good.
Phelan's voice came over the ship's communicator.
We're here. Setting down.
Phelan lowered the escort boat through the forest's canopy, tree limbs scraping the hull, and set it down on the surface.
Stay here,
Cham said to Phelan.
Keep a scan live. Let me know if you pick up anything.
Gaul ordered his crew to stay aboard the escort for the moment to minimize foot traffic near the campsite while he did his initial tracking. Then he, Cham, and Isval debarked into the humidity of the equatorial forest. Insects buzzed and clicked,
Animals in the trees squeaked, bellowed, and squealed. Callan was waiting for them in the clearing, hands crossed over his ample belly, a grin on his face. The wreckage of an Imperial shuttle, still intact, lay in the clearing.
"Camp is there,"
he said to Gaul, jerking a thumb over his shoulder at some debris, the remains of a fire, and the shredded material of an all-climate tent.
"I haven't walked near it."
"Good," Gaul said.
"Bodies? Inside the ship. Haven't touched them either. Just looked inside, but didn't enter."
"Good,"
Gaul repeated. "All business." Isval walked over to the wreck with Cham, Gaul, and Callan. Gaul was looking at the ground, the ship, the trees, and Isval could only imagine that he was drawing conclusions she couldn't. The shuttle lay on its side, sunk half a meter into the churned-up loam of the forest floor. A splintered tree limb had speared the cockpit glass. The hull was blackened from blaster fire and blistered from the heat of what Isval assumed to be a barely controlled re-entry. Pieces of destroyed equipment lay scattered on the ground near the ship. Gaul picked up a few fragments, walked a bit, picked up a few more.
"A generator and a portable comm array,"
he said, dropping a piece of metal.
"Destroyed in the crash?" Cham asked.
Gaul looked up at the night sky, then at the ground of the clearing. Slowly he walked toward the edge of the forest, stopping now and again to examine one of the holes in the turf. At last he turned to answer Cham's question.
"I don't think so. These holes aren't from a ship's blasters. Nordon?"
"Could be," Cham said. "Nordon caught Vader and the Emperor in the clearing and fired on them. Makes sense. Except the part about how Vader and the Emperor brought them down,"
Isval said, to which Cham didn't respond.
"Let me check the bodies," Gaul said.
"We need to be quick," Cham reminded him. "They have a sizable head start."
"Right."
Cham, Callan, and Isval watched as Gaul climbed up the side of the ship and disappeared through a hole that appeared to have been cut through the bulkhead. While they waited, Isval looked out at the dark wall of the forest, knowing that Vader was out there somewhere, hoping that she could get to him before Imperial troops did. Finally, Gaul lifted himself out of the wreckage.
"Bodies are two pilots and a Royal Guard. Pilots died from blunt injuries, probably in the crash. The guard died from a blaster shot to the head. Let me see if I can find a trail."
"I've got two vessels on scan," Belcour said, checking the recon ship's sensors. "No, make that three, though they're all grounded."
The recon ship had such a keen sensor array compared with other ships that Belcour knew the vessels he'd picked up could not have seen him on their own scans.
"Morse could have picked up another ship,"
Offham said in an excited voice.
"Sir, I can get two of the V-wings here quickly. We take Morse out now. Maybe we end this whole thing quickly."
"Hang on," Belcour said, eyeing the readout in the heads-up display. He frowned. Offim was gazing at the data, too.
"That's an Imperial escort and some kind of native transport. The third ship is an Imperial shuttle, heavily damaged."
He frowned.
"That doesn't make sense."
It made sense to Belcour, of course. It was Cham or Cham's people. It had to be. Offim looked over at him, eyes wide.
"Sir, that could be Morse with the free Ryloth traitors she conspired with. I'll get the V-wings en route."
He reached for the comm button, but Belcour stayed his hand.
"Let's get a better look first, Lieutenant."
"But sir, if they pick us up on their scans..."
"A better look, Offim," Belcour said firmly. "We have to be sure."
"Aye, sir."
Offim flew the recon craft at low altitude, virtually scraping the forest canopy below. As they closed, Belcour felt his skin warm. Sweat leaked down his sides, damp and clammy. He could smell his own stink. His heart was pounding. He knew what he might have to do, but the doing would come hard.
"Staying low, sir. That ought to keep us off their scans for a bit."
Belcour nodded but couldn't bring himself to speak. He waited until his craft was close enough to the group on the ground to overcome the jamming signal polluting the airwaves.
I don't think they can see us yet, sir.
Otham said unnecessarily, but no doubt instinctively, speaking in a whisper.
They're on the ground. They may not even have an active scan going.
Belcourt took the encrypted comlink from his pocket and hailed Cham, half hoping he'd get no answer. Gaul started near the camp, using a dim red light that wouldn't destroy his night vision while he studied the ground for signs. He carefully walked the area around and near the camp, sometimes looking off into the trees. Finally, he stood, nodded, and looked over at Cham.
I have them,
he said, and gestured with the block of his chin.
That way. Four of them.
You're sure?
Isfal asked, and received a withering glare in response.
He's sure, Cham said.
He gave a start when he felt the buzz of the encrypted comlink he carried in his pocket. He took it in hand, stared at it as if it were a foreign thing.
What is it?
Isfal asked.
Isn't that...
Belcourt.
How?
He shrugged, then raised Phelan on his normal comlink. Anything on scan?
All's quiet, Cham.
Not so much, Cham thought, and answered Belcourt's hail. Cham's voice carried out of the encrypted comlink.
Belcourt, where are you? I don't have anything on scan.
Belcourt ignored the Twi'lek and put on a show for Otham, who could hear only Belcourt's half of the conversation.
This is Colonel Belcourt Dre. You are to power down your ships immediately and surrender all aboard.
What are you talking about? If this is...
A wise decision, Belcourt said, and cut the connection.
He put the comlink back in his pocket. To Otham, he said,
I'll take the stick.
Sir?
Oh, of course, sir.
Otham transferred control of the ship to Belcourt.
What is that?
Belcourt asked, gesturing to nothing at all outside the bubble of the cockpit.
What is what, sir?
Otham turned to look out on Ryloth's night.
I don't see anything. There's nothing on scan.
Belcourt drew his blaster pistol in a sweaty fist and shot Otham in the back of the head. Gore splattered the glass of the bubble. For a moment, Belcourt felt dizzy and thought he might vomit. But he held it down. He looked away from the blood, cursing, rationalizing, apologizing. His encrypted comlink buzzed in his pocket. He gathered himself before answering the hail.
I'm in the air, Syndulla. 10 clicks south of your position.
How'd you find us? Why can't I see you on scan?
Too long a story. You can't see me because I'm in a recon bubble.
That's the Emperor's shuttle? Tell me there are bodies aboard.
There are, but not Vader or the Emperor. They struck out on foot.
How do you know that?
We know.
Belcourt quieted the connection and cursed loud and long as he looked down on the unending expanse of equatorial forest stretching out in all directions. If Vader and the Emperor were on foot, finding them would be nearly impossible.
We're tracking them.
Cham added. Belcourt pressed the button on the comlink so hard it made his finger hurt.
How?
I have people who can do it. We're from this planet, Belcourt. We know it. Now what do you have out here with you?
Nothing you can use. You're on your own. Mors is out here, and I think she knows everything. I need to find her quickly.
Belcourt looked over at Otham, and his anger boiled over.
You should have killed her in space, Syndulla! You should have killed them all! I gave you the damn idents! This could all be over!
Cham was silent for a beat, then said,
But it's not. Not yet. Is Mors on foot? Why do you think she knows everything?
Belcourt ground his teeth, blinked away a blurriness of vision. He was losing control of himself, he realized, the same way he'd lost control of events. Mors is on a ship with 20 stormtroopers from the Equatorial Comm Hub. And I think she knows because she came here instead of the communication center. She's looking for Vader and the Emperor, too.
All right,
Cham said.
All right. Let me think a moment. Stand by.
Belcour, strapped into his seat and unable to pace, instead fidgeted with his uniform, his hat, his hair. He imagined Cham consulting with his people, figuring out the best way to back Belcour into a corner. Finally, Cham came back on the comlink.
Listen to me, Belcour. You're going to help us get Vader. Then, I'm going to help you get Mors. Then, this will all be over.
Belcour was breathing hard, trying not to look at Otham's corpse.
Do you hear me, Belcour? Now, what do you have out here with you?
I'm, alone in the recon ship. But I've got 6 V-Wings checking the map grid for Mors. We're set up in a communication ladder.
Can you trust the crew in the V-Wings?
A laugh slipped through Belcour's teeth and he heard the hysteria in it.
To kill Mors?
Yes. I've made her out as the traitor who brought down the Perilous. But to kill Vader and the Emperor? No. To help Twi'lek terrorists? No, I can't trust them to do that, Syndulla, no.
Right, so here's what we're going to do,
Cham said.
Keep your V-Wings in the air looking for Mors. If you or your men see her ship, shoot her down. But keep them in the comm ladder in case we need them. Throughout, keep within comm distance of me as we track Vader and the Emperor. Keep your communication ladder intact, because when I call for support, I'll want those V-Wings to come in hot.
They won't help you. Did you not hear me? And they won't fire on the Emperor.
Cham's voice finally lost its calm.
They won't know, Belcour. Not in the dark, not in this foliage.
The Twi'lek lowered his voice.
I'll give you coordinates, and you'll give them coordinates, and they'll come in firing. And only if I need them. Only if.
Belcour couldn't keep a sneer out of his tone. Always planning for every contingency. One day you'll come up short, Syndulla.
Maybe, but not today, Belcour. Neither of us will. Not today.
I'm not putting my ships at your disposal, Twi'lek. Mors could leave the area and head back to the communication center. I could return there and find a security team waiting.
You're not thinking it through. She doesn't know how deep the conspiracy goes, so she came after the only people she can be sure aren't involved, Vader and the Emperor. She won't go anywhere until she has them. Trust me, Belcour. Help me get the Emperor. Then I'll make sure you get Mors.
Belcour heard the words, understood them even, but had no capacity to analyze them. He was exhausted, he knew. Too stressed to think clearly. He wasn't thinking things through. He wanted to pull back, start the day over, make different decisions. He didn't want to be responsible for the deaths of hundreds or thousands of Imperials aboard the Perilous. He didn't want a corpse in the seat next to him. He should eat a blaster shot. He knew he should, but he knew he didn't have it in him. Instead, he stared at the cockpit bubble, drew in a deep breath, and screamed until his voice was hoarse and he was out of breath. Let's just get this over with, Syndulla. Champ pocketed the encrypted comlink, frowning. He felt a measure of pity for Belcour. Cham had maneuvered him into a box, and there was no way out. There was no other end for Belcour but death. The only question was whether he faced an Imperial Inquisitor first. He shook his head, his leku waving. Phelan, you and Callan are to hop along at half-hour intervals behind us. I'll give you heading and distance. Don't lose us. We may need you for an extraction.
Understood.
They both said.
Belcour,
Isfal asked him.
He's unstable.
Cham said. Yes, Isfal agreed. She checked the power packs on her blasters. He'll trail us in the recon ship, and if we need the V-Wings for a bombardment, we can call them in. Vader downed two of our armed freighters and did it from the ground. I don't know if... Cham interrupted her, his voice a bit sharper than he wished. Do you have a better idea, Isfal? I'm just doing what I can, using what resources I have. We're better off with the V-Wings than without, aren't we? At first she recoiled from his tone, but her skin darkened and she stuck out her chin. Yeah, we are. She turned and walked away, and Cham watched her go. He seemed always to be watching her go. Gol, you ready? Isfal asked, holstering her blasters.
Ready, the big Twi'lek said.
Cham and I are with you in the lead. The rest of your team in standard formation 20 meters behind. Let's move, people.
You heard her,
Gol called to his crew, and they nodded.
We stay quiet, people,
Cham said.
To have their best chance, they'd need to catch Vader and the Emperor unawares.
Isfal, Gol, and Cham strode into the forest, Gol moving them along as quickly as he could while following Vader and the Emperor's path. Only after they were deep among the trees did Cham wonder if catching Vader unawares was actually possible. Morse flew the transport with one of Steen's officers co-piloting. Half of the stormtroopers and four more of Steen's men from the communications hub sat in the passenger compartment of the shuttle. Morse looked out on Ryloth's night. Two of the planet's moons had risen, ghostly crescents casting pale light on the carpet of treetops that swayed below. The dark expanse of the equatorial forest extended as far as Morse could see in all directions, broken often by clearings and deep ravines. The terrain intimidated Morse. She flew a desk. She had no experience in search operations. Neither did Steen. Neither did any of them. With the aid of the NavComp, one of Steen's young officers had put together a search grid as well as he could. But the search area was vast, and Morse wasn't even entirely sure what she was looking for. A downed but mostly intact ship? A debris field? Survivors on foot? Bodies? So they searched slowly, with extra care, poring over the scan results and hoping to get lucky.
Is that something?
The co-pilot asked, pointing at signs of life on the scan. The middle-aged officer had a paunch and ears so large they stuck out like sails from under his cap.
Fauna, Morris said, checking the scan. Big one. A lilac, probably? They're everywhere in the forests, I've heard.
The co-pilot sighed with impatience.
More than 1,000 ships and pods went down from the Perilous. We haven't seen any. And we haven't seen any other search ships either. You'd think we wouldn't be able to fly 10 kilometers without bumping into one or the other, even if just by accident.
You'd think wrong, Moore said.
It's a big planet, and the blast wave from the explosion would have dispersed the pods widely. They're scattered all over the Western Hemisphere. With communications down to line of sight, it's like being in a boat and trying to find 1,000 floating buoys scattered across an ocean. You could go days without finding anything or seeing another boat, and probably would. Frankly, we're just lucky to have a starting point.
I suppose, said the co-pilot. He nodded out the cockpit.
Starting point or not, that's a lot of space down there, ma'am.
Morse could only nod. She knew she was looking at several 1,000 square kilometers of rough terrain that made scans slow and iffy. For the 10th time since leaving the communications hub behind, she wondered if she'd made a mistake in going after Vader and the Emperor. She wondered if she should have taken Steen and the stormtroopers and flown to the communications center, arrested Belkor, retaken control of operations, and then gone after Vader and the Emperor. Except that if Belkor's conspiracy ran deep among the command personnel, Morse would be killed on some pretext long before she ever reached the communications center.
or she would retake command, but in the time it took her to do so, Vader and the Emperor would be killed by the rebels who were also looking for them.
No. Her only course was to find Lord Vader and the Emperor first, then gather Loyalist forces before attempting to move on Belcor. But to find them, she was going to have to be more lucky than skilled. She rubbed her tired eyes, stared out at the moon for a moment, and returned to the work of studying the scan results.
Cham and Isfal kept several paces behind Gaul, letting the big Twi'lek do his work uninterrupted and without distraction. Gaul worked fast and in silence, save for grunting to himself from time to time as he examined the ground, a tree, leaves, the underbrush. He wore a perpetual frown throughout, the crease in his forehead as deep as one of the forest's ravines. He stopped with his hands on his hips as though to think or study something on the wind, then moved on. Cham hailed Phelan and Isfal and Belcor regularly so they could keep pace in their ships. He had one comm or another in his hand at all times.
"You might as well start juggling those things," Isfal said.
Cham smiled as he raised Phelan and Callan again to give them his location. He'd ordered them not to stay in the air any longer than they had to, as it would make them easier to pick up on the scans of any Imperial ships that might be in the area. He just needed them to stay within communication distance.
Gaul suddenly stood upright, big head cocked to the side. He ran a hand down his right leku. He looked left, then right.
"What is..." Isfal began, but Gaul silenced her with a raised hand.
Signaling for them to wait, he walked ahead, his dim red light held close to the ground as he moved through the trees and underbrush. Isfal had no idea what he was looking at, but his tension was obvious from the hunch of his shoulders. Isfal was bunching her own shoulders on edge, holding her blasters too tightly. She took a deep breath.
A soft whistle from Gaul gave them the all clear to proceed. Cham and Isfal found him standing at the edge of a clearing with his hands on his hips staring ahead.
"See it?"
he asked when they stood at his side. The clearing extended on past the limits of Isfal's night vision.
"I'm looking at a clearing," she said.
"What am I supposed to see?"
"It wasn't a clearing a short time ago. See all the broken limbs, the churned soil, the toppled trees?"
Once Galt pointed them out, the features were obvious.
"A horde," Cham said.
"Yes, it was," Gaul said softly. "And I'd wager they were after the Emperor's group. Timing's right."
"Lilacs,"
Isfal said, awed by the number of them it must have taken to cut such a large swath out of the forest. "They'd have trampled everything along their way. How can we follow Vader now?"
"The horde obliterated the human tracks," Gaul said. "But once a horde is after you, it almost always catches you. So we just follow the horde."
"And what if we find it?"
Isfal asked. She'd never seen a lilac up close and had no desire to change that.
"Better question is, what if we don't?"
Cham said, leaving the implication dangling there. Isfal took his meaning. If Vader and the Emperor could handle a lilac horde, it was difficult to imagine a group of Twi'lek freedom fighters presenting much trouble.
"We're in too far to stop now," she said.
"Yeah, and that's what I keep saying about Belcor," Cham reminded her, and that brought her up short.
"If we run into a horde, we're all dead."
Gaul grunted agreement.
"Even so,"
Isfal said, thinking of Pak and Eshko and Drim and everyone else who died at the hands of Vader and the Empire.
"Even so."
She stared at Cham, trying to will him into making the right call. A long moment passed before Gaul spoke again.
"So what are we doing, Cham?"
"Following the horde,"
Cham said, and gestured at the trail the lilacs had made through the forest floor.
"We're in too far to stop now."
Chapter 16.
Vader enveloped himself in the Force, let it saturate him, and through it magnified and channeled his omnipresent rage and hate. Beside him, the Emperor too unbridled his power and sank into the Force. As one, they leapt down from the mouth of the tunnel. The moment they hit the floor, the Lileks swarmed forward, hundreds of them, a wave of spiked limbs and clicking mandibles. They raised their upper bodies as they charged, freeing themselves to use their spiked front legs like spears. They climbed over one another in their eagerness to kill and feed. Vader extended a gloved hand and loosed a blast of power that blew apart two of the Lileks rushing toward him, showering those behind with gore and chunks of carapace. At the same time, his master unleashed a destructive wave of power that cast three of the huge creatures backward and into the wall, cracking exoskeletons and leaving them broken, twitching, dying. Vader rushed forward, blade held high. He ducked a tentacle, sidestepped the stab of a spiked leg, and with a crosscut, severed the head from a Lilek as it lunged at him. Crushing the skull under his boot, he used the Force to propel the headless carcass into a trio of the creatures behind it, turning them into a knot of legs and tentacles and chittering. Feeling danger behind, he spun and lopped off the two front legs of another Lilek that was poised to impale him through the back. He leapt atop its flailing, skittering body, riding it for a time while his blade slashed and stabbed at its fellows. He ended the creature's squeals of pain by driving his blade down and through its abdomen. Bounding off its back, he rushed among the seething mass of Lileks, heedless now of their stabbing limbs and biting teeth, his lightsaber severing legs, tentacles, heads, mandibles, covering the floor in ichor-soaked body parts. Impacts from the tentacles and legs and hulking bodies barely moved him. None penetrated his armor, and what little pain they managed to inflict could not surpass the pain he carried always within him. A spiked leg caught him squarely, slammed hard into his side, and drove him sideways into the tentacles of another Lilek, which immediately wrapped around his legs and lifted him upside down from the floor. While he hung there, another Lilek lunged forward, mouth open wide as though to snap off his head. He drove his lightsaber into its open mouth and out the back of its head, and it fell dead to the floor. The creature holding him drew him toward its own mouth, but he simply bent at the waist and severed the tentacle holding him. He flipped in midair as he fell, landed on his feet, spun, and severed the forelegs from a Lilek before him. It collapsed, screeching and spraying ichor from the stumps, its huge body thumping into him in its pained spasms. The impact of its bulk knocked him backward, but he rode the motion into a spinning crosscut that bisected another Lilek's head. He'd killed dozens, a score or more, yet still, they kept coming. The press of them restricting his movement, buffeting him, spiked legs slamming into the floor all around him. Roaring, he dodged and jumped and spun through them, his blade slashing and stabbing, until a blow from a tentacle caught him flush in the chest and sent him careening backward. The creature that had struck him followed up, tentacles grasping, jaws clicking, the spears of its forelegs raised high. Meanwhile, the spiked leg from another Lilek slammed into his back. His armor prevented the limb from skewering him, but the impact drove him back toward the charging Lilek. Stumbling, Vader nevertheless held out a hand, channeled the Force, and loosed a blast of power that slammed the charging creature 5 meters backward into the wall. Wanting a moment to gather himself and check on his master, he jumped high above the teeming mass of Lileks to a ledge 5 meters up on the wall, using the Force to augment his leap. The creatures he had just escaped gnashed their mandibles, waved their tentacles, and tried to climb over one another in their frustration as they scrabbled at the side of the wall. From above, back near the tunnel mouth, Vader heard the shouts of the guards and the rapid whumps of repeated blaster fire. An explosion boomed, a grenade, causing the walls to vibrate. Vader called on the Force, leapt, and propelled himself up to the mouth of the tunnel. Deez and the captain had both taken a knee, blaster rifles planted on their shoulders as they fired into the Lileks trying to advance down the tunnel toward them. Vader casually loosed a blast of power down the tunnel mouth, destroying the leading Lileks and pushing half a dozen more backward. Seeing Vader, the captain shouted,
"Where is the Emperor?"
Deez just kept firing. Vader turned and looked down to the floor below, where his master, surrounded by a dozen or more Lileks, was spinning, whirling, leaping, his lightsaber moving so fast it blurred. He looked tiny amid their bulk, but moved with preternatural speed, his blade stabbing and slashing and severing. He was laughing, the familiar cackle somehow audible above the sounds of the Horde. But then, a score or more of Lileks lurched at him at once from all sides, leaping and climbing over one another, their tentacles a squirming net, their claws slashing, their massive chitinous bodies blocking him from Vader's view. A thought flashed through Vader's mind, a stray thought, just for a moment. His master dead. Vader ruling the Empire, the galaxy, unconstrained by the leash of an old man. He killed the thought, leapt from the mouth of the tunnel, flipped in midair, and landed hard atop one of the Lileks. It bucked, tentacles squirming. He drove his blade down through its back and out its abdomen, killing it. Tentacles reached for him from the left and right, and a third Lilek reared up over its dead kin to get at him. But he vaulted from the carcass on which he stood and onto the back of another Lilek, a meter away. Again he drove his lightsaber down and through it.
"Master!"
he shouted, still unable to see the Emperor in the press of the creatures. A blast of power from somewhere under the throng of creatures drove four Lileks 10 meters into the air, their bodies shattered by the force of the impact, limbs and tentacles showering down in a macabre rain. His master stood in the center of the circle of surviving Lileks, his hair mussed, his robe torn, his lightsaber in hand, but otherwise seemingly unharmed. Vader leapt down to his master's side. They took position back to back.
"Master."
"Lord Vader," his master responded and chuckled. "Enjoyable, no? Did you consider allowing me to die? To realize your own ambitions?"
Vader didn't even attempt to lie.
"I did, but only for a moment."
"Good. Very good."
As if on command, the Lileks surged toward them from all sides. As one, Vader and his master channeled the Force and unleashed blasts of power that slammed into the advancing creatures, shattering several and casting six or seven hard against the walls. Still, the Lileks came on, chittering and grasping and slashing. Vader and his master stood back to back in the center of the press, their lightsabers murderous red lines that Lilek limbs and tentacles and bodies could not pass. The carcasses piled up around them, a mountain of the dead, and still they came on. Soon both of them were covered in gore, lost in the Force, in their unbridled ability to kill. Vader sensed the new danger a moment before it materialized. A Lilek, from somewhere in the rear of the surviving mass, sprang high over the others, toward him and his master, chittering, the spikes of its legs aimed forward as though to impale. Vader answered the creature's leap with a Force-augmented leap of his own, wielding his lightsaber in a two-handed grip, intercepting the creature in midair and cutting it in two with the red streak of his blade. He landed atop a dead Lilek and immediately bounded back to his master's side. He hit the floor in a crouch, expecting to be swarmed by the remaining Lileks, but instead found them backing away from him. He soon saw why. They were making way for the approach of the Queen.
"You perceive the smaller danger, but not the larger," his master said. "Here it is now."
The quiet of the forest unnerved Isfahan. It seemed the Lilek Horde had stripped it of life, or that all the creatures in it were waiting in pensive silence for whatever terrible thing might come next. The swath the lilacs had cut through the terrain would have struck her as impossible had she not seen it for herself. Uprooted trees, shattered trunks, undergrowth pounded into the dirt, and yet she knew that within a month it would be overgrown and gone, as if nothing had ever happened. There were lessons in that, she thought. She and Chem hustled along beside Gaul, who covered ground rapidly with the path so easy to follow. Gaul's team trailed them, the sound of their bouncing gear and equipment loud in the quiet. Chewing up the kilometers gave Isval time to consider the end game.
What do we expect to find here?
Isval asked Cham.
Bodies.
Cham shrugged, looked at Gaul.
If the lilacs caught them, there won't be anything left of the bodies, Gaul said. But there will be signs of a feeding frenzy. That'll tell us all we need to know.
The thought of Vader and the Emperor being torn apart by a hungry pack of Ryloth's chief predatory animal seemed fitting somehow. Still, Isval had seen the things Vader could do, things that no one should have been able to do.
And if there was no feeding frenzy, she asked, if they escaped?
No one escapes on foot, Gaul said.
Isval was not so sure. Within the half hour, they found the first of the lilac carcasses. The huge body lay in the undergrowth, its head missing.
Isval eyed the body, which seemed all edges and spikes and points, covered in a dry, chitinous exoskeleton that looked like weathered stone and was probably sturdier than armor.
Its tentacles were rubbery lengths thicker around than her arm.
Blaster shot,
Gaul said, examining the stump of the lilac's neck.
See the charring. About the only way a blaster brings one of these down.
If they killed the entire horde, could you pick the trail back up?
Gaul looked at him in disbelief.
Cham, killing one lilac is one thing. Maybe just a lucky shot. But wiping out a horde with a blaster while on foot? That's like trying to kill a sandstorm. It's a force of nature. It'll consume you and barely know you're there.
Could you pick the trail back up, Gaul?
Yes, I think. Lot of variables, of course, but...
Good,
Cham said. Soon they found more carcasses, all of them headshot.
Getting closer, Gaul said softly.
Stay sharp.
They came to the edge of a ravine, and all three of them stopped cold. They looked down into it for a long time, staring in shocked silence. Gaul broke the quiet with a soft curse. Dozens of lilac carcasses lay scattered about the bottom and walls of the ravine. A number of them headshot, but some other force had destroyed the rest. Legs were broken and twisted, exoskeletons shattered and cracked. One carcass lay half buried in the hillside on the opposite side of the ravine. Gaul surveyed the scene, the usual furrow back in his brow.
The horde didn't come out of the ravine, he said. Lilacs nest underground. This must be an entry point.
He didn't sound certain to Isval.
Probably a lot of holes leading down to the nest all along that side of the ravine. But I don't...
Was there a feeding frenzy here?
Cham asked.
Isval knew the answer before Gaul said it. I don't... No, I don't think so, he said. Come on!
Isval hesitated a moment as a mental image formed in her brain of lilacs bubbling up out of holes in the ground, trapping them in the bottom of the ravine.
Stay up here and cover the approaches, she said to Gaul's people, who lined the edge of the ravine, staring down in wonder.
Stay sharp,
Gaul ordered them, and started down the side of the ravine, using what remained of the undergrowth to keep his footing as he descended. Cham and Isval followed. The creek that once ran through the ravine had been churned into a paste of mud ichor by the lilac horde. Eyeing the carcasses of the dead, Isval could not imagine what Vader and the Emperor had done to break apart the lilac so thoroughly.
Grenades?
Gaul asked,
though Isfal saw no sign of charring or burning.
Must be something we haven't seen,
Cham said. These are apex predators, Gaul said in disbelief. We fortify our cities out of fear of facing a handful of these. And this group of four, facing a horde on foot? These are apex predators, he repeated.
Vader is the apex predator,
Isfal thought but didn't dare say aloud. Gaul studied the churned dirt around what appeared to be a collapsed tunnel entrance. A massive tangle of tree roots and the hind end of a lilac stuck out of the rubble, the rest of it buried under the collapse. A lot of activity around this tunnel, Gaul said, studying the ground, like they were trying to get at something in there. Probably Vader and his group retreated into this tunnel, then collapsed it behind them to cut off pursuit. He backed off, looking up, left, and right. There will be a lot of other tunnels nearby that lead down into the nest. The whole hill is probably riddled with them, going down a long way. They wouldn't have escaped by collapsing this tunnel. The lilacs would have come at them from another tunnel.
You're telling us Vader is underground?
Cham said. I'm telling you he went underground, Gaul said. Probably the rest of the horde did too.
What remains of it?
Isfal said, looking at the carcasses.
If they come out, Cham asked, will they have to come out here?
That's a big if, Cham.
But if they do,
Isfal persisted. Gaul shook his head. I've seen computer models of lilac nests. They're labyrinthine. There are scores of entry and exit points. If the Emperor and Vader somehow managed to stay alive down there, they could come out anywhere within, say, a 10-kilometer radius of here. Sorry, Cham. I think we just lost them. Cham's skin darkened, a sign of his frustration. Isfal was clenching a fist. Cham activated his comlink.
Callan, Phelan, we think Vader and the Emperor are underground. They may come up anywhere within a 15-kilometer radius of our current location. Get up in the air and start a scan. You find anything at all, sound off immediately.
If there are any ships out here, they could detect us,
Callan told him.
I know, Champ said.
But do it.
After Callan and Phelan acknowledged the order, Cham took the encrypted comm link he used with Belcor and repeated the same thing. Isfal could only hear Cham's half of the conversation.
They could be Belcor, but I doubt it.
Cham looked at the many dead lilacs, the collapsed tunnel.
You're not seeing what I'm seeing here.
Just get up in the air and scan.
I know.
Just do it.
He cut the connection.
They could already be out and on the move, Cham.
Gaul pointed out, that 10-click estimate is just an estimate.
I realize that,
Cham said and cleared his throat.
Options. What else do we have?
Gaul shrugged.
We could go down after them,
Isfal offered. That is not an option, Gaul said.
We don't have gear for that, and it's too dangerous,
Cham said. None of us would come out, Gaul said. I guarantee that. Isfal's irritation with the situation boiled over into anger at Gaul.
Are you also guaranteeing that Vader won't come out then? That they're dead down there?
Gaul put his hands on his hips, looked around at all the dead lilacs, and shook his head. Not after seeing this, no. I don't know what could kill them if not this. His admission deflated the bubble of Isfal's anger. Gaul looked up at the sky through the openings in the forest's thick canopy. Winds bringing rain. Smell it? As if on cue, thunder rumbled. What kind of men are we after here, Cham? Gaul asked. This is like nothing I've ever seen or even heard of. Cham just shook his head, Leku waving. Isfal had only the one answer, and she still wouldn't say it out loud.
Apex predators. That's what kind of men they were after.
Vader and the Emperor stood in the shadow of the Queen's towering form. Her respiration was audible in the sudden lull, loud and wet. Each of her six legs was a meter and a half in circumference, and the spikes they ended in looked like sword blades. Her squirming tentacles, four instead of two, were 10 meters long, as thick as a man's waist, and ended in glistening points of chitin that leaked some kind of ichor or perhaps poison. Her mouth could easily bite a person in half. She advanced slowly, tentacles squirming, the ends of her legs striking the ground with a clipped staccato rhythm. She lowered her head and hissed as she came on. Her mandibles worked the empty air. Vader's master wore the same knowing half-smile he seemed always to wear.
"Shall we begin, Lord Vader?"
Vader answered only with the sound of his breathing. The Queen exploded into motion, and so too did Vader and the Emperor. A tentacle lashed at Vader, and he leapt over it, sidestepping a second tentacle, and chopped down with his blade. He missed as the Queen snapped the tentacle back, his blade putting a charred furrow in the stone of the floor. He leapt high over her, flipping at the apex of his trajectory, and as he descended, he took his blade into a two-handed grip and pointed it downward to impale her. She lurched sidewise and lashed out with a tentacle, which struck him squarely and knocked him to the floor. She turned as though to advance on him, but his master sprang before her, jumping, twirling, and ducking under the rapid swings of her tentacles and the spikes of her legs. His lightsaber slashed rapidly at every opening, striking the tentacles, but scarring them only, not severing them. The Queen lunged toward his master and he flipped backward, landing a few paces away. Vader jumped to his feet, spinning out of the way of her attempt to stab him with the chitinous spike at the end of one of her tentacles. He found himself face to face with five Lileks, all of them hissing, tentacles squirming. He stabbed one through the head, backflipped high over another, hit the ground, and severed its rear legs. To his right, his master gestured, and with the force, lifted two of the Lileks from the floor. Vader and his master exchanged no words, but each knew precisely what the other intended. With a casual throwing motion, the Emperor flung the two Lileks in Vader's direction, their legs and tentacles squirming, bellies exposed. Slashing and turning a rapid spin, Vader bisected both of them. The four gory pieces that remained fell to the floor in a heap. From above, blaster shots slammed into the Lilek that remained before him, with several shots bouncing off its carapace before one finally caught it in the head and put it down. Vader glanced up to see Deez kneeling in the tunnel's mouth, blaster rifle lowered, firing down into the melee. Vader reflexively slashed with his lightsaber as another Lilek scrabbled toward him. The blade took off the legs and left the creature squealing and spasming. He saw his master dodging the rapid, repeated strikes of the Queen's tentacles. The Emperor twisted and spun and leapt, slashing with his lightsaber where he could, and where the blade bit into the thick tentacles, it opened black gashes that leaked a thick ichor. The pain seemed only to make her angrier. Vader leapt high and landed at his master's side. The Queen roared and loosed a flurry of strikes. Working in tandem, they parried her blows, counterstruck, opened dozens of holes in her tentacles, their blades spinning blurs before them. Her very bulk slowly pushed them backward, and from time to time, they had to turn their attention to a Lilek that rushed them or tried to jump them from the side. Moving almost as one, the two Sith Lords turned and spun around an unspoken central point, parrying, slashing, killing. Frustrated, the Queen rushed toward them with surprising speed. Her huge body slammed into them both, knocking them backward. Quick as a lightning strike, she struck with snapping mandibles. The Emperor fell flat to the floor to avoid the bite, and she slammed her legs down at him like so many pikes, each blow chipping the stone of the floor. He rolled and spun underneath the mountain of her body, while Vader slashed at her tentacles, the ichor from her many wounds spraying in all directions. She was trying simply to smash his master with her mass, but Vader perceived her intent, raised a hand, and held her up,
straining, grunting for the fraction of a moment that it took for his master to roll out from under her. And then they were at her again, their blades humming and cutting. She hissed, wounded tentacles flailing, legs stomping, and bounded backward in a crouch.
Emperor!
Dee shouted from above, and fired at the queen as rapidly as he could pull the trigger. The shots bounced off her carapace and ricocheted wildly around the chamber. Vader used his lightsaber to deflect one into the face of the lilac nearest him, killing it. Beside him, his master split the head of a lilac that lunged at him. Vader decided to finish matters.
Master,
he said, and nothing more.
Go,
the Emperor said. Vader sprinted forward and leapt high. The moment he reached the apex of his jump, his master seized him with the force and flung him the rest of the way so that he landed atop the queen's back. Immediately, she bucked, tentacles flailing, and he drove his lightsaber down into her back. To his surprise, the blade only bit partially and then slipped to the side. She screamed and hissed with agony. He grasped it two-handed again, preparing another blow, but she reared up hard, bucking, and flung him to the floor. He landed near his master, who grabbed him by the arm and heaved him to his feet with uncanny strength. She whirled around at them and whipped her tentacles at Vader and his master, following with a lunge forward and a vicious bite at Vader. They sidestepped her attacks, once more falling into their usual rhythm, and cross-cut at her head with their lightsabers. Both blades struck home. The Emperor tore a long gash in the armored exoskeleton of her head, and Vader destroyed one eye. She shrieked and reared backward, eye socket leaking gore, tentacles whipping wildly. Dee's continued to pour down fire at her, but the shots appeared to do her little or no harm. Still, the distress of their queen drove the remaining lilacs into a frenzy, and they charged from all sides. Vader bounded backward, leapt high up on the wall, and hung with one hand from a narrow ledge, his boots planted on the stone. He'd assumed his master would do the same, but he hadn't. Instead, his master stood in the center of a crowd of the creatures, spinning, whirling, slashing, killing. Dee's diverted his fire from the wounded queen to the lilacs attacking the Emperor, but the frenetic motion of the combat prevented him from aiming accurately, and his shots bounced off their carapaces in all directions. The queen recovered enough to survey the scene, and her eye fell on Vader, perched as he was on the wall, seemingly vulnerable, and she lurched toward him, shrieking. She pushed through the lilacs around her, her tentacles squirming wildly, grasping for him. The remaining eye fixed on him, and her mouth opened wide in a prolonged hiss. Below, an explosion of force lightning shredded a handful of lilacs and left his master standing in the center of a circle of charred, dead creatures. He made eye contact with Vader, nodding, and Vader knew to hold his position as the queen closed. His master raised both hands and sent a storm of force lightning into the queen, enmeshing her in sizzling blue lines. She screamed and spasmed in agony, her mandibles parting wide to reveal the rows of her teeth as the lightning tore at her carapace and the organs underneath, burning her inside and out. Vader acted quickly. Drawing on the force, he leapt off the wall straight at her head. Despite her pain, she managed to snatch him out of midair with a tentacle, seizing him around the waist and squeezing. His armor creaked under the strain, and he shouted with pain, but as ever, let the pain draw him deeper into the force. She lifted him high and jerked him toward her slashed face, the ruin of her eye, her mouth opened wide to hiss, exactly as he'd anticipated.
Finish her!
His master shouted. He threw his lightsaber at her open mouth, guiding it with the force, causing it to spin as rapidly as a rotor as it flew into her gullet. She gagged, recoiled, one good eye wide with pain and confusion, as Vader maintained his mental hold on his spinning blade,
cutting her apart from the inside out. Desperately, instinctively, she drove the spiked, poisoned tip of another tentacle at his chest. Enmeshed in the force, he caught the spike in his gauntleted fist and stopped it before it reached his armor. He grunted with pain. With exertion, the thick muscular appendage of the giant creature straining against his force-fueled strength. He was the stronger, and stared into her face as his lightsaber tore through her innards and his master's lightning charred her flesh. She screamed again in a final burst of agony, and the hulking remains of her body collapsed to the floor, taking Vader, clutched now in a limp tentacle, with her. He hit the floor in a crouch along with the bulk of her carcass, shook off the tentacle, and recalled his lightsaber to his hand. The blade cut through her carcass and returned to his hand, slick with fluid. The remaining Lilek shrieked and chittered, tentacles and legs jerking wildly. Deez continued to blast at them. Vader met the eyes of his master standing 5 meters away, and both nodded. Immersed in the force, they set about slaughtering the remaining Lileks. The lines of their lightsabers rose and fell, and the confused, stunned beasts barely defended themselves. Soon the floor was carpeted in carcasses, and Vader and his master were the only living things standing amid the carnage. His master's cackle filled the silence. Both deactivated their blades.
"Well done, my friend,"
the Emperor said. Back up in the tunnel, Deez used the high tensile cable integrated into his belt to rappel down the wall. He picked his way through the slaughter, obviously trying and failing to control the expression of awe on his face, until he stood before Vader and the Emperor. He took a knee, his fist to his chest.
"My Emperor."
"The Captain?"
Vader asked.
"Killed by one of the creatures, Lord Vader,"
Deez said as he stood.
"His body is not recoverable."
To Vader, the Emperor's mind seemed to be elsewhere. He may have heard Deez or not. Vader could not tell.
"I think we should leave this place before it starts to stink,"
the Emperor said finally.
"This is the way to the surface. I'm quite sure."
Together, Vader, the Emperor, and Deez moved quickly through the tunnels, ever upward, back toward the surface. They stayed alert for Lileks, but the tunnels were empty. The entire nest must have been annihilated.
"The creatures struggled when the queen died. When the head is removed, the body must soon die,"
the Emperor commented. Vader said nothing, merely looked at his master.
"Do you not see? That's why we're hunted, Lord Vader. The rebels hope to cut the head from the Empire."
"Of course."
It was unlike his master to state something so obvious, except with a purpose.
"And?"
His master adorned his face with his usual half-smile.
"Many things are that way, even some relationships. If the head is removed, the body cannot exist alone. The relationship is complementary, almost symbiotic."
Vader understood his point then.
"Yes, Master."
The roll of thunder reverberating through the stone told them they were nearing the surface. The tunnel they traversed gradually narrowed until they could move only single file. Deez led, and Vader came last. Ahead, Vader saw that the tunnel was blocked. He could hear the sound of dripping water and falling rain from behind the blockage. Deez climbed amid the rubble, trying to peer through it.
"We're right at the end," he said. "I can see the outside through a crack in this rockfall. Probably a rock slide caused by the rain. We'll need to clear it, my lords."
Vader and the Emperor stepped around Deez, faced the tons of rock and dirt,